Have you ever tried to land a fully loaded cargo plane every 62 seconds? Not once, not twice, for 24 straight hours. I'm Tail Dragger and you're listening to The Hangar, right here on Radio Hangar. Pull up a chair because today we're going back to one of the most extraordinary single days in the history of flying. April of 1949, Berlin, and a little stunt they called the Easter Parade. Today's show is brought to you by AviationSoul.com. Aviation Challenge coins for every milestone in flight. First solo private pilot instrument rating all the way up. If you've earned it, they've got a coin for it. Every coin tells a story. Check them out at aviationsoul.com. All right, to understand what happened on Easter Sunday 1949, you've got to understand what had been going on for the previous 10 months. See, in June of 1948, the Soviets decided they were going to squeeze the Western Allies out of Berlin. They blocked every road, every rail line, every canal. 2.5 million people in the western sectors of that city woke up one morning with no food coming in, no coal, no medicine, nothing. Stalin figured the Americans, the British, and the French would pack up and leave. He figured wrong. Instead, the United States and its allies launched the Berlin airlift. Operation Vittles, the Americans called it. The British called theirs Operation Planefare, and the idea was simple on paper and absolutely insane in practice. They were going to fly everything an entire city needed to survive, every single day, by air. We're talking food, coal, fuel, machine parts, everything. Now, here's where it gets interesting. In those early days, the airlift was a mess. A well-intentioned, heroic mess, but a mess all the same. Pilots were flying worn out C-47s, the old military version of the Douglas DC-3, good airplane, legendary airplane. But she could only carry about 3.5 tons per trip, and Berlin needed something like 4,500 tons a day minimum just to keep people from starving. So they brought in the big iron, the Douglas C-54 Skymaster. 4 engines. Could haul 10 tons per load, and they started pouring them into the air corridors over Germany, like water through a funnel. 3 narrow air corridors, each one only 20 miles wide, connecting the western zones to Berlin. That's it. 3 highways in the sky for hundreds of airplanes. Enter Lieutenant General William Henry Tunner. Now, if you don't know that name, you should, because Tunner was the greatest air logistics mind who ever lived. He'd run the Hump operation during the war, flying supplies over the Himalayas from India to China, which was considered the most dangerous cargo route in the world. Tunner looked at the Berlin airlift in its early weeks and saw chaos. Planes stacking up over Tempelhof, pilots making multiple approaches, controllers pulling their hair out. One bad day in August of 48, a terrible day they called Black Friday. Everything fell apart. 3 C-54s crashed in weather at Tempelhof. Nobody killed, thank God, but the whole operation ground to a halt with planes circling in the soup. Tunner was actually in one of those planes, circling for hours, and he made a decision right then, no more. He was going to turn this into a precision machine, and he did. Tunner implemented what he called the conveyor belt system. Here's how it worked. Every airplane in the corridor flew at a fixed altitude and a fixed airspeed, 3 minutes apart. You came in, you made one approach, one. If you missed it, you did not go around, you did not circle. You flew back to your home base in Western Germany and got back in line. No exceptions. Think about that for a second. You're a pilot. You've just flown an hour loaded with 10 tons of coal. The weather is terrible. Fog, rain, low ceilings. Tempelhof sits in the middle of a city surrounded by apartment buildings. You've got one shot, miss it, and you fly all the way home and start over. The pressure on those pilots was enormous, but it worked. It worked because it eliminated the chaos. Every airplane was a link in a chain, and the chain never stopped moving.
Tunner had ground crews down to a science too. When a Skymaster rolled to a stop at Tempelhof, a jeep pulled in front of it with a big follow me sign, and it was guided straight to an unloading bay. Crews swarmed it, German workers, many of them, men and women who'd been fighting against us just 3 years earlier, now unloading coal and flour to feed their own city. They could turn a C-54 around in less than 30 minutes, land it, unload 10 tons, do a quick maintenance check and get it back in the air. The pilots didn't even get out of the airplane in those early weeks. Operations officers would run out with coffee and a sandwich and the weather report for the flight home. You ate in the cockpit, you filed your return clearance while they unloaded your coal, then you taxied out and took off for the return trip to Rhein-Main or Wiesbaden or Fassburg. Back in Western Germany, you loaded up again and did it all over. Some of these guys were flying 3 round trips a day. 3, each round trip was roughly 2.5 hours. You do the math, they were spending 7-8 hours a day in the cockpit, sometimes more. Day after day, week after week, for months.
And the conditions at Tempelhof were something else. The approach brought you right over a graveyard and a row of apartment buildings. In bad weather, which was most of the time because this is northern Germany we're talking about, you'd break out of the overcast and those buildings would be right there in your windshield. The old-timers who flew it said you could see people in their kitchens that close.
Now by the spring of 49, Tunner had this thing running like a Swiss watch. They'd built a whole new airport at Tegel in the French sector, laid it out with longer runways using rubble from bombed buildings. They had Tempelhof, Gatow in the British sector, and now Tegel, three airports receiving round the clock. And Tunner, being the man he was, decided it was time to make a statement. The Soviets were watching all of this, of course. The whole world was watching. And Tunner wanted to prove beyond any doubt that the airlift could sustain Berlin not just at survival levels but indefinitely. He wanted to break every record in one concentrated push. And he wanted to do it on Easter Sunday, 1949, a day of resurrection, if you will. He called it the Easter Parade. The planning was meticulous. Every aircraft in the command was made ready. Maintenance crews worked through the nights leading up to it. Every C-54 that could fly was going to fly. The coal was pre-positioned at the bases in Western Germany, stacked and ready. Ground crews at all three Berlin airports were briefed and doubled up. And then it began. On Easter Sunday morning, the conveyor belt accelerated. Airplanes launched from Rhein-Main, from Wiesbaden, from Fassburg, from Celle. One after another, into the corridors. Fixed altitude, fixed airspeed. 3 minutes apart, sometimes less. The sky over Germany was a river of aluminum. At Tempelhof, the Skymasters were landing and taking off with a rhythm that witnesses said was almost hypnotic. The sound never stopped. That deep drone of four Pratt & Whitney radial engines on approach, the bark of tires on concrete, the roar of takeoff power, all day, all night, for 24 consecutive hours. The ground crews were magnificent. Those German workers, many of them women, threw themselves into it, unloading coal in freezing rain, their hands black, their backs aching. They knew what this meant. This was their city, their survival, and they were not going to be the weak link in Tunner's chain. And when the numbers came in, they were staggering. In one 24-hour period, the combined airlift forces delivered just under 13,000 tons of supplies into Berlin, nearly 13,000 tons, in roughly 1,400 flights. That's a fully loaded airplane touching down in Berlin every single minute. Think about that. Every 60 seconds, 10 tons of cargo arriving by air in a city surrounded by a hostile army. It was the largest single-day air cargo operation the world had ever seen. And friends, it has rarely been matched since. Now here's the part that gets me every time I think about it. There were no computers managing this. No GPS, no flight management systems. This was done with radar, radio, and human beings. Controllers with grease pencils and strips of paper. Pilots hand-flying approaches in weather that would keep most of us on the ground today. Mechanics keeping tired airplanes in the air with hand tools and determination. The Easter Parade broke the Soviets' will. Not immediately, not that day, but it proved what needed proving. The Western Allies could feed Berlin by air. Not just barely, not just in good weather, but massively, reliably, indefinitely. The blockade was pointless, and on May 12, 1949, less than a month after the Easter Parade, the Soviets quietly lifted the blockade. The roads and rails reopened. Berlin would remain free. But the airlift didn't stop right away. Tunner kept it going for months after, building up reserves in the city in case the Soviets changed their minds. When it finally ended in September of 49, the numbers were almost beyond comprehension. Over 277,000 flights, over 2 million tons of cargo, 2.3 million tons, to be more precise, delivered by air. 39 American airmen died during the airlift, 31 British, and at least 9 Germans on the ground. They died in crashes, in mechanical failures, in weather. Their names are on a memorial at Tempelhof, which is no longer an operating airport, but stands as a monument to what happened there. And there's one more thing I want to mention, because it captures the humanity of the whole thing. A pilot named Gail Halvorsen. You might know the name, he became famous as the candy bomber. Halvorsen noticed kids watching the planes from the end of the runway at Tempelhof. He started dropping little parachutes made from handkerchiefs with candy bars attached, wiggled his wings on approach so the kids would know it was him. Other pilots started doing it too, Operation Little Vittles, they called it. Over 23 tons of candy dropped to the children of Berlin during the airlift. Here were kids whose country had been at war with ours just a few years before, looking up at American airplanes and seeing not bombers, but hope chocolate and hope drifting down on little handkerchief parachutes. That's what flying can do. That's what it did 77 years ago this week. Most of the history for today's show comes from Andre Cherny's book The Candy Bombers and Richard Reeves's Daring Young Men. Both excellent reads if this story grabbed you. Find more at radiohanger.com. Fly safe out there, friends. I'll see you next time.